This is Further Grievances Below, written by Elapsed Spiral, and read by Tipsy Kitty. Chapter 1. It happens on Sunday, or maybe it's Monday. Whatever. A day ending in Y. Ed's gouging another tally mark into his raid counter when the cabin door opens and the newest recruit drags in yet another elaborately carved loot chest for him to check. He's running on negative sleep, so it takes him a moment to appreciate that the chest's contents aren't lumpy flour or dust. New recruit whistles. Whew, that is a lot of rhino horn. Sure is. Good shit, too, by the looks of it. Ed dips his knife inside and brings a generous helping out on the flat of his blade. He shuffles over to the desk to grind it up more, then divides it into neat little lines. A lot of neat little lines. "Want some?" he asks as he admires his handiwork. New recruit looks starstruck. "Last time I did some of the old horn, I wrote a 3-act opera and invented flash mobs in an afternoon." "Flash mobs?" "They're great. What you do is you get a bunch of people, like, say, your fellow devotees, and then you all do a song or a dance somewhere weird and unexpected, like, well, anywhere. People never expect a song and dance routine." Ed tears a strip off an old wanted poster and rolls it. "So are you in or out?" "Thanks, but there's a lot of guts on deck, so I should probably..." "Fuck off then, chatterbox," Ed mutters before snorting a line. New recruit salutes. "Fucking off, boss. Enjoy." The first line doesn't do anything, so Ed snorts a second, and a third. Shit, maybe it really is dusty flour, or a dud batch. Or, worse still, maybe it's fucking elephant tusk. Not long after Ed cracks how they got all the circles to link together on the rhino horn chest, definitely aliens, he sees it. Hidden in the geometry are wedding rings, and what those wedding rings are telling him is to track down a wedding ship. Those are probably a thing, right? And infiltrate it so he can warn the bride and groom that love is a lie, before it's too late. 1. Conspiracy theorizing the sacred geometry. He does another line or three to keep the ideas coming, and sweats at the audacity of his plan. He'll disguise himself as a vicar. 2. Impersonating a vicar. And the crew'll disguise themselves as guests, and then they'll hammer home his message with a musical number about how terrible love is. 3. Flash mobbing. Ed can see the whole thing in his mind like a 3-act opera. It's perfect. It's foolproof. It's a career-best strategy. The raids are fine, but this will really grab the headlines and stick it to the man. Not any particular man. Pfft, Ed doesn't care about any of those. The conceptual man. He's really going to show that guy. 4. Sticking it to the man. He's feeling amped as he puts the finishing touches on the shopping list for his vicar disguise. So naturally, that's when Izzy decides to bother him. Heard that one chest was full of rhino. Izzy gives him a laser-eyed look. Ah, you already know.
What? No?
Ed's skin crawls as Izzy keeps studying him. It feels like he's reading Ed's fucking mind. Like he's about to snatch the plan right out of his head and shit all over it. What he needs to do is throw Izzy off the scent. So he says, "All I know is I've started a business and I need to pick up supplies in the Republic."
"You've what?"
"I've been busy diversifying."
"We're gonna take a break from all the raids then, yeah?"
Izzy practically sounds hopeful about it.
"Yeah, break from the raids. Something like that."
"What's your idea?"
"Good question."
Ed zips around his brain, looking through the options.
"I'm gonna pot."
"Huh. All right. Remember what happened when Jack mixed weed and rhino horn?"
No, not pot. I'm gonna make pots. Pottery,"
Ed says, to his own surprise. "Get Fang to set course for the Republic." Pottery. Izzy's laser eyes are still doing their damnedest to drill through his lie to the bedrock of truth beneath.
"I'm gonna make ashtrays."
"Sure, why not?
There's a gap in the market for ironic ones."
5. Potting ironic ashtrays. Author's note. This is where I started to regret my decision. How will they be ironic? Are they gonna say smoking's bad for you or something? This is why Izzy's not the ideas guy.
They're gonna be shaped like the pyramids.
It's another fantastic idea. He's actually going to have to make some now.
Right after he's done flash mobbing that wedding. You stub your cigarette out on the sides of the pyramid, which is ironic because that's the opposite of a regular ashtray shape. Do you get it?
6. Defacing the pyramids.
I get it. They'll fly off the shelves. People hate the fucking pyramids.
Yes, boss.
They don't trust them. Don't trust the shape of them. There's nothing sacred about their geometry, is there?
Or is there? Fuck, he'll have to check that. His to-do list keeps on growing. Meanwhile, Izzy's eyeing where the rhino horn lines were, his suspicion wafting off him like a stench. Fine. Ed tried zigging to put him off the scent of his real plan. He'll just have to start zagging instead. He puts his hands up in surrender.
All right, you got me. That was a cover story.
For what?
For my actual plan. Didn't want you picking it apart.
And what's your real plan?
I'm gonna become a bootlegger.
The declaration is as much news to him as it is to Izzy, but yet again, it's still not a bad fucking idea. They're just all winners today.
I suppose there's a crossover with piracy, Izzy says. Exactly. Crossover. Cross-selling, cross-ditch.
What would we be bootlegging?
Don't think, just speak. Absinthe.
7.
Bootlegging absinthe.
That's not ambitious enough.
Absinthe and gunpowder.
How would we bootleg gunpowder?
By watering it down and cutting it with sawdust. Think of the profits.
8. Diluting gunpowder. He's so good at this. He's a fucking genius. Izzy's buying it, too. Double genius.
So, we need to go ashore to get the necessary ingredients,
Ed says conclusively. Unless they can find a ship with all of that. A boat full of Vickers and absinthe and gunpowder. Is that a thing?
Would that just be a French ship?
I'll tell Fang to set a course for the Republic.
Do that, and tell him to keep his eyes peeled for a wedding ship while he's at it. A French wedding ship.
Why should he do that?
Ed shrugs. I don't know, for fun.
As you wish. With this wind, we should be disembarking in about 30 minutes.
Wait, hold on, Ed says. We will be disembarking?
I need to keep us to a schedule. We can't stay anywhere long anymore. Not when we've been blowing up half of the Carib. Ed's heard enough. He nods along, but draws his pistol. Izzy seems barely surprised.
Ed, boss. Get in the wardrobe.
Why can't I come with you? Izzy insists, as Ed backs him into the auxiliary one. Why can't I see what you're doing if it's just bootlegging?
It is. That's really what I'm doing.
Ed jams the lock with a spare knife.
Back later.
Boss, come on, stop this now.
Nah, I'm not gonna do that. In fact, I'm gonna do it more.
9. Neither ceasing nor desisting. At least get back before midday.
You're not the boss of me, I'm the boss of you,
Ed says, then marches out of the cabin because that's a solid comeback if ever he heard one. The crew do their usual vanishing trick as soon as he steps on deck, scuttling away like the rats they had because of all the stolen food spoiling all over the place. Actually, where did the rats go? Not the point. The slowest guy off the mark today is Frenchie, who's still climbing down the rigging when Ed goes to stand between it and the stairs.
Hey, Ed says cheerily.
Frenchie looks like a wolf caught in the headlights.
Hey there, Captain. How are you?
Good. Great. Need someone to come ashore with me.
Oh, why is that then?
I need a vicar disguise, Ed says. And, as I'm sure you're aware, the odds of finding a ship full of vicars is low.
Yeah, they're not ones for sailing in the summer.
That's a thinker.
Frenchie's fucking fascinating. Do you know where Izzy is, Captain? Frenchie says, looking around oh so casually. Haven't seen him in a while. Should probably check how he's doing.
No need. I know where he is. I locked him in the wardrobe. The secret one.
What was that?
Had to do it for his own good. He was acting seriously weird. He kept threatening to make ashtrays.
10. Bearing false witness.
That is pretty weird.
Frenchie keeps darting glances at him. But you seem very happy?
That'll be the rhino horn. Do you want any before we go shopping? I've practically got a sink full. Not that I'm keeping it in a sink. That'd be even weirder than the ashtray thing.
Frenchie titters.
Maybe later, yeah? Think of it as the crew's collective rhino horn. We share everything around here, don't we?
11. Communism. Whatever that is. Author's note. This one was the hardest to work in for some reason.
Everything except Ed's real fortune, the one that's hidden under the floorboards and behind the false walls of his countless safe houses.
Thank you, Captain. Actually, I've been meaning to ask you.
Ed nods him on, but Frenchie still looks ready to cack himself.
Ask you for a favor? I'm so sorry.
A favor that isn't Rhino Horn.
Ideally, yeah? Frenchie squeaks. I can just leave.
No, no. Let me hear it.
Well, we've got this cat.
No, we don't, Ed says. No pets on board.
Oh, but he's not a pet. He got hired, like everyone else, to sort out those rats we've been having. Thing is, though, cats are haunted and cursed. So no matter how good Robert Hodgson is at...
The cat's called Robert Hodgson? I thought we just hired a guy called Rob.
We did, but he's a guy who's a cat. Anyway, because Rob's haunted and cursed, we should really be keeping him locked up for the crew's safety. And then we should probably just sack him and leave him on land so he stops doing his evil tricks where he makes my eyes run and my nose get all stuffy.
12. Imprisoning a cat. Ed mulls it over. And Rob's murdered all the rats, has he? Every last one?
13. Genocide. Probably. Author's note. It was this or a spider massacre.
Yeah, that's why all the scratching sounds have stopped.
Ed had assumed those were just in his head, like his misery was trying to claw its way out of his skull. Good to know some of it was rat-related.
Deal, Ed says. Rob's getting fired so long as you're coming shopping. Fang, head for the Republic.
Aye, aye, Captain, Fang says.
And Frenchie, go grab your reusable bags.
Fang's way too particular about parking, so Ed takes over steering to speed things up at the dock. Sure, he pulls into the harbor a little fast, but no one's standing near the rail, so no one goes overboard. 14. Excessive speed within a harbor. The harbormaster's little dinghy still pulls alongside while they're mooring, though.
I think he's complaining about the speed we was going, Finchie says, but it's kind of hard to hear him when he's all the way down there.
Tell him to fuck off, Ed says. Or go fuck himself. Both. That's the thing, though. I don't think he can hear me either. It's the same problem in reverse, isn't it?
Use fucking semaphore, then.
15. Offensive semaphore. Ed mutters as he makes a gun with his hand and aims it at the harbor master. 16. Improper use of a dive signal. Author's note. A little bit of dive signal humor for you there.
I need to get ready. He better not fucking be here when I get back.
After he's finished fixing his hair and done a few more lines of rhino horn, he rejoins Frenchie and sees that the harbor master has in fact disappeared.
What happened with him?
Ed asks. Well, he said you were lying and there aren't any triggerfish anywhere around here.
What? What the fuck's he on about?
No idea, but he did fuck off when I told him to, Frenchie says as they walk down the gangplank with Rob.
Good job. You've got a bright future ahead of you.
Thank you kindly, Captain.
Where are we going first? Well, I thought we'd split up to save time. I'll get the vicar gear, you get the absinthe supplies.
When Frenchie looks baffled, it occurs to Ed that...
I haven't explained about the absinthe, have I?
Not in so many words.
It's simple. I'm getting everything I need for a vicar disguise so we can infiltrate a wedding ship and tell all the guests that love is a lie.
Okay, Frenchie says slowly.
But I don't want Izzy knowing that. So I lied and told him I'm starting a new business making counterfeit absinthe.
So you're going to look for a dog collar.
Why do we need a dog? To catch Rob? But then how do we catch the dog?
No, as in the little thing Vickers wear. Frenchie gestures to the collar of his own shirt.
Right, yeah.
And while you're doing that, I've got to find the ingredients for absinthe.
Couldn't we just steal some from Jackie's?
Why would I do that? Ed says.
Jax runs the Republic with an iron fist. We're besties. I'm not about to fuck with her.
17. Propping up a minor dictator. Author's note. Total stretch, but you wouldn't fuck with Jackie is my point. Okay, but it's just that...
What are you trying to say?
Frenchie cringes. Just seems a bit... unequal.
18.
Providing unequal opportunities. Author's note. At least writing this has taught me the difference between unequal and unequal. Ed smiles brightly as he puts a hand on his pistol. Who's boss?
Nope, yep, good point, Captain. Have you got a shopping list?
I need a wig and a stupid outfit. Easy.
I meant for me?
Why do you need one? Just get the ingredients for absinthe.
And what are those?
They stare into the middle distance as they think. It's not like Ed hasn't drunk absinthe, but he can't say he's thought about it on a molecular level before.
Well, it's French, he says.
Yep, definitely French.
Which means it's probably got shit like echinacea in it.
Probably, Frenchie says. The rest of the ingredients will come to you. Ed gives him an encouraging slap on the arm. Meet back here at noon, okay?
19. Creating curfews.
Yes, boss. No problem at all.
I'll make sure you get business receipts so we can get creative with the tax.
20. Tax evasion.
I was actually planning to just steal everything.
21. Shoplifting and theft. Author's note. That's right, it's a twofer.
Even better. Back at noon.
Wait, nope. Back just afternoon. That'll show, Izzy. 22. Breaking curfew.
Ed watches Frenchie hurry away before turning his attention to his own mission. Where is he going to find a vicar? Not exactly tripping over them in the Republic, which means that, joy of joys, he's going to have to venture out of town. But before he can do that, he'll need another disguise, to make sure no one recognizes him as the guy who's been blowing up the Caribbean. One of his safe houses is just around the corner, so he heads there first. He's renting the place out to some guy called Sick Bucket Simon? Something like that. There's a shop downstairs, which is either a butcher's or a pet shop, and an apartment upstairs that's full of carefully concealed Spanish gold. Not that Simon knows about that. Predictably, his spare key is in his other jacket. Ed considers knocking, but it's quicker to just shoot out the lock and let himself in. Simon's inside and looks ready to shit himself when Ed walks into the living room.
23. Trespassing.
Blackbeard.
Hello, I'm... Oh, you already know. How's things?
Not too bad. Are you here about the insulation?
The what?
Last time you were here, I said that it gets cold at night, and you said you'd look into insulation.
24. Renting out an uninsulated abode. Ed considers for a moment.
Suppose I did say that. How about I just burn the place down instead? That'd warm you right up.
25. Arson.
Simon audibly gulps.
Any other concerns I should know about, Cy?
Nope, no. I mean, I'm called Bill, but you can call me whatever you like, dude.
Ed goes over to the wardrobe and finds the false back untouched. Better still, there's a shapeless black jacket and trousers hanging inside.
Mind if I take these?
Ed asks pointlessly. 26. Larceny. Author's note. Also learned what larceny is. Big win.
Go ahead.
Simon watches as he slips the clothes on. They're a bit snug and a bit short, but they mostly cover his leathers.
Won't you get hot in the woolen leather, sir?
Nah, it's not even that warm for this time of year. Don't know what people are talking about.
27. Climate change denial. Ed spots something furry on the wardrobe shelf. A tiny curly wig, just like the ones the man wears. It's not the kind you cram your own hair under. But those would probably be a challenge for Ed anyway. Besides, rich white guys love a stupid hat wig, which means Vickers probably love them too.
How's it look?
Ed says after he's balanced the wig on his head. 28. Wearing a wig as a hat.
Fucking awesome, dude.
Godly, devout as shit. When Simon looks at a loss for words, Ed growls,
Say yes.
Yes, yeah, you look religious as hell.
Great. I'll wear it out.
Do you want me to burn the place down a little before I go?
No, I'm all good, Simon says.
Ed crosses himself like religious types do, then heads downstairs. Time to move on to the next stage of his plan, finding transportation to take him out of town, aka a fucking horse. He's wandering down a side street, thinking about how it's high time someone invented a horseless cart. How hard can it be? When he walks straight into a wall. A warm, fleshy wall. On closer inspection, he sees it's actually a jet-black horse, complete with carriage and driver. Pulling out his gun is a chore thanks to the extra layer of clothing,
but he eventually succeeds, and the mousy-looking driver scurries down from his little seat. The man makes a better job of crossing himself than Ed did.
Please don't hurt me.
I'm not going to hurt you. I just need to borrow your cart, Ed says. I'll be back before you know it. 29. Pregnancy and horse wrestling. Author's note. Another twofer. I'm on a roll? He's got his fingers crossed behind his back, but the guy doesn't need to know that. Ed clambers onto the seat and tests the reins. After some trial and error, the horse takes the hint and gets into gear. If you got a problem, my name's... Don't say it, don't even think it. Steed Bonnet. 30.
Cart rental under a fraudulent name.
Of course it fucking is. But that carriage is a... Ed doesn't hear the rest of the man's sentence because he's busy trying to avoid a wall. He mostly succeeds. It's only when he's left the Republic and gotten onto quieter roads that he feels eyes on him, and risks looking over his shoulder to see a whole fucking procession of horses, practically up his arse. Strange route you're taking, the gangly driver of the closest horse says. Yeah? Which way would you go? Ed says casually. Do you want to lead the way instead? Okay, father. The guy manages to maneuver his horse in front of Ed's without falling into a ditch. I'm not your dad, Ed says. The guy gives a strained laugh. Thank you, father. We could all do with some laughter on a day like today. Well, that's a weird thing to say. But Ed just goes with it and follows the guy a few miles more until he leads their convoy through the gates of a cemetery and straight over to a freshly dug grave. Which is perfect, because that means there's got to be a vicar some... Oh, shit. Chapter 2. On the plus side, Ed's disguise clearly works, even without the cat collar. On the downside, mourners are now gathering around the grave. Oops. The gangly bloke joins a guy with ears like a trophy, a weeping widow, and a fellow with no memorable features whatsoever, all of them white. Ed watches as the men carry a coffin out of his own carriage. 31. Commandeering a coffin. He can't make out the widow's face through her gauzy black veil, but he gives her a sympathetic grimace anyway. Hey, sorry for your loss, love. Thank you, father, she says with a sniffle. Once they've lowered the coffin into the grave, the men turn to face him. Trophy Ears gives him a suspicious look. Do I know you? 32. Smart casual attire at a formal function. I'm the vicar, Ed says, adjusting his wig. From elsewhere, I mean. Maybe. I used to work with. He nods towards the grave.
Horatio,
the widow wails. Horatio, Ed agrees. Good old Ho, that's what we used to call him. Horatio wasn't a clergyman, gangly bloke says. I mean, the job I did before I was a clergyman. Right, Trophy Ears says dubiously. Shouldn't we be making a start? True, he's the vicar. The father, whoever he is, this is his show. Yeah, one second. Ed checks the carriage for a prayer book or a crib sheet and comes away empty-handed. Whatever, he can improvise. He's great at that. Must have left my prayer book in my other vicar jacket, Ed says, giving the widow an apologetic smile. No matter, I don't even need that thing. He clears his throat. Okay, here we go. The mourners watch him expectantly. Something about having so many eyes on him reminds Ed that he's the kind of guy who laughs at a funeral. He bites his tongue to keep himself in check. Mostly, anyway. 33. Excessive mirth at the funeral of a work colleague, and plagiarism. Author's note. Committed by me, not Ed. This joke is the real crime. Are you laughing? Gangly bloke says, disbelieving. Actually, that was a cry, Ed says. Lost my ability to shed tears at the job Ho and I used to do together. And what exactly was? Ed hushes gangly bloke, collects himself, and tries again. What is life? What is a sermon? Why are we here, wearing clothes and crying on a Monday afternoon? 34. Beat poetry. It's Tuesday, unmemorable fella says. I knew that. What? Do you think you could try something more traditional? Start by pardoning his sins, that kind of thing? Absolutely. Ho was a traditional fella. I can do that. Ed addresses the grave. Ho, God and I forgive you for all the bad shit you did. 35.
Pardoning a war crime. Author's note. Spoiler alert for half a page's time. And a prayer? Trophy Ears insists. What about a prayer? A normal one. Ed only giggles slightly as he nods. Here we go. Life is a mystery. Everyone must stand alone. I hear you call my name, Heavenly Father, and it feels like home.
That's not a prayer, Gangly Bloke says.
It's like a prayer.
It's a song.
It was written by Madonna herself, Ed says.
But it's...
Did you go to vicar school? I've written fucking papers about this shit, man. I think I know what I'm talking about. 36. Improper citations in an academic document. Author's note. You could say I am neither ceasing nor desisting when it comes to making terrible song jokes.
You're not even wearing a dog collar, Trophy Ears says.
Ed's going to remember the name of that thing one of these days.
Plus you've got that ridiculous thing perched on your head.
That stings. Ed smooths his wig defensively. I don't need a dog collar. I'm religious as shit. Stuff I know about God would make your head spin.
What's that even?
You want to try me? I could preach at you till the fucking cows come home. 37. Proliferating religious propaganda.
He's not even a vicar, Gangly Bloke says. This is outrageous. How have they sent a charlatan to oversee a captain's funeral?
The question derails Ed. Hang on. Ho was a navy captain?
A decorated one at that. He was working on the plan to tear down the so-called Republic of Pirates.
Gangly Bloke sneers.
You'd know that if you'd really worked together like we did.
I've never worked with fucking war criminals, and never will.
Ed snarls, eyeing the grave.
You know what, Horatio? I'll change my mind. I fucking unpardon you.
You can't do that, Gangly Guy says. You're not a real clergyman.
Because I don't believe in any of this shit. 38. Atheism. I am a captain, though,
Ed says, dramatically whipping off his wig and jacket.
Captain fucking Blackbeard, and I do what I fucking want.
Might get the fuck out of a Navy captain's funeral before his Navy mates tell their Navy mates they just saw the guy who's been blowing up their ships every day for the last 3 months.
39. Disturbing the peace.
Fuck you guys and the horses you rode in on. Fuck your fucking dog, save the queen shit.
40. Changing the word God to dog in God Save the Queen, and inciting a riot. Ed yells as he scrambles back onto the driver's seat of his carriage, flipping more triggerfish at the men before addressing the widow.
I am sorry for your loss, love, even if he sounds like a dick. I'll see if I can find a real vicar and send him your way. I need to take the cart back anyway. It's a rental.
Ed tears back into town, the living Navy bastard's hot on his heels. He puts more distance between them when he starts going straight over roundabouts instead of around, and he's managed to shake them off completely by the time he's sneaking back down alleyways in the Republic.
41. Failing to signal at a roundabout.
Amazingly, the vicar's exactly where he left him and looks equally stunned to see Ed in his carriage again.
I told you I'd be back, Ed says breathlessly. Any ding should buff out, but feel free to charge Deed Bonnet if they don't. May the force be with you, Dad.
It's already gone noon, so he sprints to the dock, the stitches tearing in his woolen trousers with each stride. Sure enough, Frenchie's already stood waiting for him, arms weighed down with a box. The closer Ed gets, the more the box seems to squeak.
Hey, boss, Frenchie says over the racket. How'd it go?
Ed glances at his decimated woolen trousers before cutting his losses and tearing them off.
That's been better. How about you?
I got the absence supplies. Took a bit of tracking down. But I found a guy who knew a guy who had some echidnas.
42. Echidna trafficking. Author's note. I did what I could.
Why the fuck did...
I said echinacea.
Realization dawns slowly over Frenchie, as does horror.
Shit, you did.
That does make more sense. I was wondering how you'd get a whole echidna in the bottle. But then they squeeze fairies in there, don't they?
Cruelty, if you ask me.
Ed's not got time to unpack all that.
What the fuck are we gonna do with these? Can we feed them to Rob?
Rob's already got a new position at Jackie's.
We need something to do with them before.
Ed opens the box and stares at its writhing contents.
Are those eggs? You think there's eggs in absinthe?
Frenchie joins in looking.
I didn't buy those. They must belong to this lot. Guess some were pregnant. Must a good deal. Frenchie, I do not have time to play fucking midwife to some freaky hedgehogs and their fucking babies.
43. Unlicensed midwifery. They're Puggles.
You know that, but you don't know about echinacea?
Puckle sort of sticks in the mind, you know. Ed glowers at the echidnas for all the good it does.
Could you use them in a spell or something? You're into that shit, right?
44. Witchcraft. Well, the rest of Frenchie's answer is drowned out by bellowing and braying as the Navy bastards come charging down the road. Frenchie's eyebrows fly up.
What's with that lot?
No clue, but I think that's our cue to leave.
Run.
They sprint to the Revenge with the Navy arseholes at their backs. Ed resists lobbing the echidna box at them and focuses on racing aboard and bellowing at the crew to weigh anchor and get them the fuck out of there. The crew pulls the gangplank up just as the officers run up it, sending the lot into the sea with a satisfying splash. 45. Murder. Thrice over. Author's note. Technically, the sea killed those guys. Ed can feel the rhino horn wearing off, so he heads straight for the cabin, stripping out of his sweaty jacket and top as he goes. He's ready to crash on the floor when he hears scratching in the walls. Great. Rob didn't even kill all of the rats after all, idle fucker.
Boss.
Wait, hold on. Different kind of rat. Ed drags himself over to the auxiliary wardrobe long enough to yank the knife out of the lock. Izzy casually wanders out like he's been having the world's longest shit.
How'd the plan go, Captain?
Great. We're fully stocked for echidnas now, Ed says. Izzy opens his mouth, but thinks better of asking questions. Maybe he's smarter than he lets on. Piss off till Fang's found us a wedding ship.
Yes, boss.
After the cabin door closes, Ed helps himself to the last rhino horn lines before they go stale. It's either minutes, hours, or days later when Izzy knocks again.
We're approaching the vessel, Captain.
Vessel? A wedding ship? An actual fucking wedding ship? Seriously? Fucking fantastic. All Ed needs to do is change into his vicar disguise and... He resists pouting when he remembers what happened to it.
About fucking time we got to that ship, it's taken forever.
He grumbles.
Probably. Maybe.
If he doesn't have his disguise, then they can't do the flash mob either. So long, career best strategy.
Hello, same old, same old.
Ed sticks his boring, regular clothes back on.
All right,
he says as he fastens his stupid fucking gun belt across his chest.
Let's go say hello to the happy couple.
Think that's all of them, Ed says, resting his head on Steed's chest as Steed rolls up his old wanted poster.
I didn't even do most of it. Just threatened or implied that I would.
When Steed doesn't respond, Ed glances up to find him looking stunned.
What's up, babe?
He says, stroking Steed's side. You're saying this was all one day's worth of crime?
What can I say? Rhino horn's a hell of a drug.
Ed gives him a peck on the lips.
If you think that one's bad, where do you see Saturdays? Now that's a doozy.
The end.